Hi, you're listening to All the Best. I'm Belinda Lopez. We're bringing you more stories this week from Radio with Pictures, a fantastic live storytelling experience that was performed at the Sydney Opera House late last year as a part of the Graphics Festival. Producers and storytellers took over the Opera House in Sydney, and the show was aired live on FBI Radio at the time. This show's for the true sound believers, but if you want to see the pictures in Radio with Pictures, you can head over to radiowithpictures.com.au. The theme of the performance is filling in the blanks, and I'll pass you on now to Anna Burns, host of Radio with Pictures.
This is Radio with Pictures coming to you live from the Sydney Opera House as part of Graphic. Coming up soon, we'll hear from author and playwright Anna Barnes about how you fill in the blanks when something you've lived with your whole life is completely gone. But first, Lawrence Lerne and Lee Ragazzi on visuals.
I like to ask people, what's your first memory? And they always say, I can't remember. To which I always say, yes, but after all the things you forgot, what's the first thing you remember? To which they say, I can't remember. The conversation always loops. Yes, but after all the things you forgot, what is the first thing you remember? I can't remember. And so we become like the movie Inception, as if it starred a couple of potheads. The first time I came upon this conversational loop was with Bill. As part of my high school's community service program, every Thursday afternoon, I had to sit and talk with old Bill at Catteris Christie Nursing Home. He would sit silently and pretend to listen, and I would tell him stories, mostly about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The first time I met Bill, he didn't say anything. He just eyed me off with a type of suspicion that Doctor Who fans have for hipsters who wear bow ties and tweed. I was not from his world. There was something about how he stared at me that made me feel very afraid. To everyone else, he appeared as a cute little man seeing the world through rose-coloured cataracts. But to me, he was just one hoodie top away from Emperor Palpatine. To break the ice, I started reading out some lyrics from an old songbook that our community services coordinator had given us. The grand old Duke of York, I informed him. He had 10,000 men. He finally spoke slowly. How long have you been in Australia? Usually when someone says, how long have you been in Australia, it actually means, how did you command our English tongue so fluently, O exotic man of the Orient? I said I was born here. I'm glad times have changed a lot since Bill's my age. Nowadays, people don't ask, where are you from? They tend to just look at me and say, do you work in IT? I do not work in IT, you racists. When Bill assumed I was from overseas, he certainly wasn't being bitter or racist, and he certainly didn't need me to recouple his router and check if his CMOS settings were compatible with the latest firmware update. Bill just wanted to know where people were from the first time he met them. The thing was, every time I saw him, he met me for the first time. At each visit, he simply forgot who I was. Every Thursday, he would just sit staring, listening to me talking. Eventually, he would speak, how long have you been in Australia? And I would repeat the same answers as if I hadn't told them before, that my mum and dad came from Hong Kong, what my parents' jobs were, and how I have an older brother who likes to pin me down and fart on my head. But as the weeks went along, I started testing his attention with fictional answers to his questions. I'm only in Australia for a short time because I'm a communist spy. Or, I'm not actually Chinese, I'm Scottish with a skin condition. Or, my dad picks the fruit that goes to Cotties that makes the cordial that I like best. I couldn't tell where Bill believed me or if he was just pretending to listen. The fact was, his memory was fading, fading faster than Facebook's popularity. I wonder if lying about your past is worse than forgetting about it. I always thought that you had to be Bill's age before you started forgetting things, but I'm actually becoming acutely aware that I'm losing valuable stock in my memory banks bit by bit every day. Now, have Have you ever walked into a room to do something, but when you arrive, you have forgotten why you've gone there in the first place? And you find yourself standing bewildered like an alien abductee returned to Earth, thinking to yourself, why am I in this room? Followed by, is there some reason I'm holding this block of butter in my hand? If this has happened to you, you have domestic amnesia. If it hasn't happened to you, it's because you've simply forgotten it. Why? Because you have domestic amnesia. I've discovered a memory retrieval trick to solve such situations. Walk backwards. I simply walk backwards out of the room in reverse like a bad Michael Jackson impersonator doing a moonwalk to where I started from 3 minutes earlier. Then I hit the play button and walk back through the house, retracing my steps to the room and stop. I slowly dip my foot through the doorway, back into the room, in the hope that some spark of recollection for being there would come flooding back to me. This memory trick always works. The only time this trick won't work is when there's someone in the room watching you from the couch as your shoe goes in and out of the room. The look on their face tends to be a distraction. Folks, I finally reached an age where I realised that I've forgotten more in my life than I remember. When I was a little kid, I remembered everything because everything was so new. The first day at school, the first trip to Movie World, first place in that 20-cent swallowing competition, and winning a trip to the hospital. When I was a teenager, I remembered every line of dialogue in Star Wars, every curve in Baywatch, every mbop in Hanson, and every curve in Baywatch. I could remember everyone's phone numbers off by heart. But now, as an adult, I barely even remember my own number. I have to make lists to keep track of all the things I need to do. There's even to-do lists about to-do lists. I blame technology. Because of technology, the best bit of information that I learned from Google is I don't need to remember information because I have Google. Because of technology, people hold their mobile phones in the air to take photos of concert instead of watching the concert. Today, it's so easy to capture millions of memories on our iPhones that these moments can become commonplace and disposable. I remember a time when we used film that only allowed 24 shots, 24 precious shots, except for when we were on holidays, we had 36. And we couldn't just look at them. No, we had to wait for 4 months until we finished the roll, and then we went to the chemists. Capturing memories took so much effort. But nowadays, when we take a photo, we look immediately at the iPhone screen with instant nostalgia. Oh, I remember this moment like it happened 3 seconds ago. Wait, I'm blinking. Delete. Eventually, because of technology, our memories won't be in our brains, but stored as pithy status updates and trashy photos of you on Mark Zuckerberg's mega hard drives in Silicon Valley. Listen, what I'm saying is make sure your memories count. Otherwise, after you die, your Facebook timeline lives on, forever immortalizing you as that crazy pissed dude at the party who's pashing brioni behind the KFC dumpster. Old Bill sat staring at me from his nursing home chair. What's your earliest memory, I asked him. He said, pashing with brioni behind the KFC dumpster. Now, of course he didn't say this, but if he did, it would have been awesome. He said, I don't remember. Well, what's the first thing you remember after all the things you forgot? Bill sat there hesitating, trying his best to recall. To change the subject, I opened the old songbook that my community services coordinator gave me and read out some lyrics from a 1950s classic. It started off with a giggle. Then a big grin cracked across his face. Then old Bill hummed along to the words.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours.
I like to think that when I'm Bill's age, some kid will unlock my lost memories by playing me songs from my era. Knowing my luck, it'd be Gangnam Style. That afternoon, Bill told me about all sorts of things. They were his first memories about his childhood in Hawthorne, the war, and how he met his wife. He smiled when he told me what his kids were like when they were my age. Well, to be honest, this is probably not exactly what he told me, but this is how I choose to remember him.
Thank you.
Young Pictures and Lawrence Lohan on stage with music by Peter Harlow. We're coming to you live today from the Graphic Festival, filling in the blanks and forcing the unlikely bedfellows of radio and pictures together. Our collaborators for this next piece met last year while living in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. The story began after a dinner the two shared 1 year and 5 days ago. Here is Anna Barnes with pictures from Sarah Drake.
My mum had a runny nose for an entire year once. And this wasn't just your regular cold sniffle. This was a full-blown nose waterfall that cascaded down her face wherever she went. When she was driving, she'd put a towel on her lap to catch the drip. And when she'd wake up in the morning, there would be this wall of rock-hard tissues on her neck that had got soaked with the clear, salty liquid and then dried hard in the night. She went to the doctor and they said it was allergies, but spring passed and still with the drip. It took a full year for someone to realise that my mum had brain fluid coming out of her nose. Now, this information would have been slightly more alarming for some people than it was for my family. When I was 8 years old, my mum had a tumour the size of a grapefruit removed from her head. A grapefruit. And during one of her surgeries to remove the tumour, the bit of bone or cartilage or whatever it is that sits between her nose and the fluid that the brain sits in was weakened. And over time, it had worn down entirely, thus the brain juice flowing down her face 7 years later. A common case of the leaky brain. And when she went in for surgery again to repair the leak, she came out with a completely different problem. She could no longer taste or smell. Now, this was just one of the hundreds of complications my mum's many surgeries have caused her over the years, from personality changes to epilepsy, but this was different. Mum, who had handled having half her scalp in the nurse's fridge for a week as they operated on her, who had handled severe side effects of medication without a complaint, was devastated when she lost her taste and smell so many years later. She stopped eating, she cried a lot, and she scared the hell out of her 14-year-old daughter. But thankfully, in 2 weeks, her taste and smell returned. Later, when talking to her about it as an adult, she said to me that it made her feel like life wasn't worth living without taste and smell. So all of this is to say that from a young age, I had a good understanding of brain damage being fluid, of brain connectors reconfiguring, of taste buds returning, and of taste and smell being pretty pivotal to happiness. This niche knowledge set was useful when I was lying on an emergency bed 20 years later with my very own brain injury. Now, my injury hadn't come in the form of a dormant tumour growing by the year, but instead two young men, a motorcycle and a metal pole. After I was out of hospital and the pain in my head stopped keeping me awake and my neck no longer needed the brace, I started to realise that something else had changed. It took me a full week to realise that something was wrong, that something was missing. I remember Googling, "I can't taste or smell." I learnt that it was in fact a condition. It even had a name, anosmia. Now, the neurologist's diagnosis for anosmia didn't originally fill me with fear, but instead intrigue. I remember while in a drug-fueled stupor attached to a drip after another trip to the hospital, thinking that since I'd lost two of the five senses, that I might have gained a superpower, or at least a talent that I hadn't earlier possessed. In my pain-killed, dripping mind, this sort of quid pro quo seemed feasible. Fair, how life should be. I imagined being able to melt like Alex Mack, or being able to hear ants speak. But my main daydream was that I would open my mouth to sing one day and Beyoncé-style vocals would come out. That while knocking out the temporal lobe that connects my brain to my nose with the metal pole, those thugs had coincidentally tapped the Beyoncé lobe into full effect. My first real experience of anosmia, of realising that this was something outside of my control that continued even when I wasn't thinking about it, was at a friend's house a few weeks after the incident. It was my first night off the couch and my friend was having some people over for drinks. She was moving around the cane furniture and she passed me her water bottle to hold. Without a thought, I took a drink. Something that in the retelling seems slightly uncouth and perhaps presumptuous, but felt none of these things in the doing. So I'm thirsty and I'm drinking from her water bottle and she comes back onto the porch and seeing me slam it down, she looks at me funny. What I'd been guzzling wasn't water, but straight vodka. I've learnt now to watch others drink. Like a creep at a bar, I watch how quickly or how slowly you're drinking, and I try and follow your lead. I like to drink red wine because I can feel the tannins, like a warm feeling on the roof of my mouth. And if I'm drinking a spirit, I pair it with a bubbly drink so it feels a little less like water. Eating, like drinking, is indeed a very different experience now. Having anosmia doesn't mean you can just eat whatever is put in front of you. Texture is important, but in a way that seemingly has no rhyme or reason. While vegetables are generally great, fruit is horrible. Falafel is delicious, but cucumber makes me gag. Stir-fried vegetables are like soggy cardboard mixed with brains, and mango is like performing a sex act you don't quite consent to. But it's not all bad news. Bread is fantastically fine, olives are great, and cheese of all varieties make my world a better place. And chili now plays an important role in my life. Chili is a chemical burn, so I get the same burning sensation in my mouth as I did before all of this started. In a world of no taste, it can be really nice to feel something every now and then. I have a squeezy bottle of wasabi in my fridge that I put on my tongue whenever the dullness of anosmia gets a bit too much for me. It's taken a while to find the foods and drinks that I like, but now that I have, it hardly feels like I'm missing out at all. It's only when people talk about trying something new that I've never tasted or smelt before that I can sometimes get a bit sad. Like truffles, or bacon, or any of the million other foods in this world I've never tasted. Walking down a supermarket aisle, I sometimes feel a hotness behind my eyes as I realise I might never get to taste it. And they say your memory is connected with your sense of smell, and that makes me wonder what effect that's having on me right now. Trying to remember this story? Is my brain confused? Is it desperately trying to reconnect those pathways destroyed on that roadside? I am a forgetful person, but that's not always bad. Sometimes I feel like I'm tasting or smelling something so much that I forget that I can't. My memories of how something tastes, like chocolate, can help build a feeling, a sensation that feels like the real thing. I say things like, "That smells good," when I see something cooking on a stove. And those moments don't make me sad. They make me happy that I have those memories. I'd like to think that if my mum's anosmia stayed past the fortnight, she would have seen that too. That not being able to taste or smell doesn't take the colour out of your life. It just takes some readjusting to your new colour palette. The other night, I was walking back from work through the Queen Victoria markets. It's a Sunday night, so that's when the rotting fruit is being loaded onto the gigantic garbage trucks as the rats fight each other for the nascent fish heads sitting on the curb. And I used to have to make a 20-metre detour around the trucks as an invisible shield of smell keeping us all away. And as I walked right past the truck and the people loading it with their face masks on, looking at the crazy girl who's willingly walking into the putrid smell of a week-long market, I thought, maybe I do have a superpower after all.
Pictures by US-based comic artist Sarah Drake and words from Melbourne author and theatre maker Anna Barnes. This is Radio with Pictures and I'm Anna Burns. Now a story in which Aunt Nina Las Vegas, along with friend and longtime Twitter follower Georgia Perry, fills in the blanks of Nina's Armenian heritage.
Keeping up with the Exarians. My sister claims that our surname has given her discounted cab rides before.
Armenian?
Yeah, well, my grandfather is.
Okay, $10 is fine.
For that very reason, I always look to see if there's an identification card above the dashboard. If there's an IAN, then I'll use my bank card and hope for the same leniency. When a flight attendant asks on my last name or comments on my last name, my new reply is saying out loud, "It's Armenian, like Kim Kardashian." My father was born in Egypt just like his mother. Although I refer to myself as Egyptian-Australian, my grandfather, my father's father, is an Exarian, and as the name suggests, Armenian. Like many Armenians after the genocide, Joseph Exarian's family moved from Armenia to Syria and eventually Egypt. I am two parts Australian, one part Egyptian, and one part Kardashian. I possess a nationality that I'm proud of and a cultural mix that adopts with each environment. When in Cairo, I ate ful and molahea, smoked hookahs, and involved myself in political discussions about the situation. In my hometown of Wagga, I shop at Sports Girl and I go to the ag races. In my spare time, I watch Courtney and Kim take New York. I'm not the only one in my family intrigued by the prominent Armenian family. A few years ago, my aunt texted me late at night,
Nina, who are the Kardashians? And why is there a documentary on them?
Hey Marie, it's a reality show. They're famous for being famous. Their dad was an Armenian lawyer who had something to do with the OJ Simpson case. P.S. lol.
Should I watch it?
I do, but I watch Grey's Anatomy. 10 minutes later, she texted,
I'm bored. Plus, they didn't mention Armenia once.
Correction, Marie, they do. Quite a lot, actually. Just maybe not in the documentary you watched that night on free-to-air TV. Kimmy K has been an outspoken advocate for the recognition of the 1915 Armenian genocide. And in April this year, she filmed and released her own PSA.
Beginning in 1915, more than 1.5...
A week prior, she tweeted this.
Today, let's all stand together and remember the 1.5 million people who were massacred in the Armenian genocide, April 24th, 1915. Hashtag, never forget.
Kim and I have a shared heritage. It's hard not to be impressed. Like the Kardashians, who are now living in America after fleeing from the Ottoman Turks, my family are diasporic Armenians. Although I've never controversially been on the cover of Turkish Cosmopolitan, I share other character traits with Kimmy K. For a start, we both work in media. Earlier this year, Kim Kardashian described herself as Armenian and hairy.
No fake lashes today. Hashtag love being Armenian.
Kimmy stated this fact on record in order to get her name removed from some hair removal endorsement legal controversy. More common ground. Oh, and Kanye, I'm also a massive fan. Nina Las Vegas from Georgia Perry. Holy s***, Nina Las Vegas. Kimye. In the week after Mohamed Morsi was named the first freely elected president of Egypt, I travelled from Paris to Cairo to visit my father's family. Although the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs suggested I reconsider my travel, my cousin Tawfiq reminded me of a Facebook chat that things just weren't going to change quickly. So, with my parents' support, I went. Nina Las Vegas to Georgia Perry. Ha! Tawfiq showed his friends my photo with Kanye. We've switched from talking about Morsi's government to Kimye already. I've met Kanye West before. 3 times, actually. Once in 2005, again in 2010, and most recently in February of this year. When we hung out, Kanye was in an amazing mood. We played Connect 4, talked about Lil B, and he showed me his shoe designs. That night, he was accompanied by an Armenian-looking Kardashian-esque girl. Apart from making me a drink, the only time the small-waisted, massive-ass woman moved was when Kanye was ready for bed. Months later, when the news of Kimye broke down the internet, I knew it was true. Seriously, the only person more Kim Kardashian than this girl was Kim Kardashian. After I told the world about my night with Kanye, a friend linked me to this bit in a Donald Glover piece about his preference for Armenian girls. He says that Armenians are the black people of Caucasia.
Armenians.
And he further emphasizes like this theory on his girls. Childish Gambino track, Freaks and Geeks. Nina Las Vegas to Childish Gambino. I'm Armenian. Childish Gambino to Nina Las Vegas. Good, then I love you. Sold. My mother, who jumped the gun on retirement activities by starting her family tree research in her 40s, recently suggested looking into obtaining an Armenian passport. Always on the hunt for a European ancestry link somewhere in my family tree, she informed me that some people believe Armenia may eventually become part of the EU. Political allies aside, I am an Exarian, and as long as I receive mail from Sydney's Armenian community, which I do, I like the idea of formalising an element of my ancestral past. Sure, it would mean that it would be easier for me to follow my dreams and work abroad, but it's also important that I formalise my connection to this place, this home of my forefathers. And also to Kim. Thank you.
Radio with Pictures was produced by Gabrielle Clark, Q Min Lu and Eliza Silas for FBI Radio. Commissioned and performed live at the Sydney Opera House for the Graphic Festival, performed with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our show today has been broadcast live over digital radio with support from the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia's Digital Radio Project, with a special thank you to David Seiss. Our technical producer was Alex White. Brian Duong was behind our logo and intertitle artwork. A big thank you to the curators of Graphic, Jordan Vazar and Ben Marshall, and all the technical crew at the Sydney Opera House. Thanks also to our writers, producers and artists. You're all amazing.
Was Radio with Pictures. There's also a vodcast available of the show, The Pictures in Radio with Pictures. And as you heard, you can head to radiowithpictures.com.au to check it out. This is All the Best. We're produced at FBI Radio Sydney in association with Radio Adelaide, 4ZZZ in Brisbane and SYN in Melbourne. Our production manager is Carly-Ann Keneally. Our executive producer is Jordana Caputo. I'm Belinda Lopez, the features executive producer of the show. Tune in next week for the last installment of Radio with Pictures.